From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile, and at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Joe Biden has been sworn in as the 46th President of the United States. Kamala Harris has made history as the first woman, first African-American, and first Asian-American to become vice president.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
We'll get reaction to the inauguration and Biden's sweeping executive actions from Harvard professor Cornel West and the pioneering journalist Maria Hinojosa. Plus, we hear the inaugural poem by 22-year-old Amanda Gorman, the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history.
When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States Wednesday, ending the Trump era with a call for national unity. Speaking on the steps of a Capitol building that just 2 weeks ago prior was mobbed by a group of right-wing extremists trying to overturn the election, President Biden said the U.S. faces an unprecedented combination of challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, mass unemployment, racial injustice, white supremacist violence, and the existential threat of climate change. And he warned against the spread of lies in a thinly veiled reference to the Trump administration's constant stream of falsehoods over the past 4 years.
Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and defeat the lies.
Biden was administered the oath of office by Chief Justice John Roberts. The Supreme Court's first Latina justice, Sonia Sotomayor, administered the oath to Vice President Kamala Harris. Harris is the first woman, first African-American, first Asian-American, first Indian-American, and first Caribbean-American to hold the office. We'll have excerpts from the inauguration after headlines. President Biden signed 17 executive orders Wednesday in his first official act from the Oval Office. Among other things, the orders strike down Trump's ban on travelers from majority Muslim nations, end construction of Trump's border wall, strengthen DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program for young immigrants. Biden rejoined the Paris Climate Accord and canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, put a moratorium on oil and gas permits in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and ordered a review of Trump's actions undermining public health and the environment. Biden extended a federal moratorium on evictions and a pause on student loan payments and interest. President Biden also ordered the U.S. to re-engage with the World Health Organization and ordered a mask mandate for interstate travelers and visitors to federal buildings during the pandemic. Biden's mask mandate came as the United States recorded one of the deadliest days of the pandemic, with nearly 4,400 deaths. The CDC forecasts the U.S. death toll will pass 500,000 in February, with 100,000 more deaths predicted in just the next month. Biden is set to sign 10 new executive orders on the pandemic today and will release a new national strategy to combat COVID-19 after the White House said the Trump administration left no national strategy on vaccinations. The Biden plan calls for funding states' testing and vaccination programs, improvements in data collection, research into new therapies for COVID-19, and the establishment of a pandemic testing board. President Biden will also order the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to develop workplace protections against coronavirus. Democrats took narrow control of the Senate Wednesday after Vice President Harris swore in three new Democratic senators, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff of Georgia and Alex Padilla, who will replace Harris in the Senate representing California. Republicans control 50 seats, as does the Democratic caucus, with Vice President Harris serving as a tiebreaker. New York Democrat Chuck Schumer has become Senate Majority Leader, replacing Republican Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. The new senators represent a number of firsts. Alex Padilla becomes the first Latino senator from California. Reverend Warnock becomes the first African-American senator from the South. And John Ossoff will become the youngest senator, as well as the first Jewish-American senator from Georgia. The Senate on Wednesday approved Avril Haines as director of national intelligence. 84 senators voted to confirm Haines, 10 voted against, all of them Republicans. Haines was President Barack Obama's top lawyer on the National Security Council from 2010 to 2013 and CIA deputy director from 2013 to 2015, where she authorized using drone strikes to carry out extrajudicial assassinations. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives is set to vote today on whether to grant a waiver to allow retired Army General Lloyd Austin to become Pentagon chief. General Austin is on the Army board of the weapons contractor Raytheon and is a partner in the venture capital fund Pine Island Capital. Critics say his nomination contravenes the principle of civilian control of the military. Joe Biden is the first president in recent history to come into office before any of his key advisors are installed. As President Biden's other cabinet nominees await their hearings and confirmations, he's appointed nearly two dozen acting officials to temporarily lead agencies. Meanwhile, Biden has fired Peter Robb, the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, after Robb refused to resign. Robb was a Trump appointee, a former management lawyer and fierce union foe who infamously helped President Ronald Reagan break the Air Traffic Controllers Union in 1981. Donald and Melania Trump boarded Air Force One for one final flight on the presidential aircraft Wednesday morning. Before flying to his Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida, Trump addressed the crowd of several hundred gathered at Joint Base Andrews.
So just a goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form. So have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Trump walked off the stage to the 1970s disco anthem YMCA. Frank Sinatra's My Way played from loudspeakers as Air Force One rolled down the runway and lifted off. Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey tweeted, quote, "Goodbye and good riddance, Donald Trump. See you at your trial," unquote. This comes as Politico reports lawmakers have privately discussed the possibility of a three-day impeachment trial for Trump, which would be the fastest of any such procedure for a president. Proud Boys leader Joe Biggs was arrested in Florida Wednesday and charged with helping to lead the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The FBI says Biggs and other members of his far-right group used radios with earpieces to coordinate real-time communication as they smashed their way into the building. In international news, the United Kingdom now has the highest COVID-19 death rate in the world. On Wednesday, a record 1,820 people died across the UK as hospitals report being overwhelmed with patients, and the worst may still be to come. This is Kelly Clark, an ICU nurse in England's Royal Derby Hospital.
We've got staff who are absolutely exhausted and traumatized. A lot of staff are struggling with their mental health. The nurses are coming in and working extremely hard. A lot of them are doing extra shifts.
In other international news, Zimbabwe's foreign minister, Sibusiso Moyo, died of COVID-19. The former army general played a key role in the 2017 coup that toppled Robert Mugabe. Meanwhile, in Brazil, deaths are rising in the Amazonian city of Manaus after hospitals ran out of oxygen. The Bolsonaro government is facing criticism for not helping avert the crisis despite warnings of looming oxygen shortages. In news from Iraq, at least 28 people died and 73 were injured when two suicide bombers attacked a busy market in Baghdad earlier today. No one has taken responsibility for what's the first suicide attack in the city in nearly 2 years. Earlier this week, Iraq's cabinet voted to delay the upcoming general election by 4 months until October. Tony Blinken, Biden's nominee for Secretary of State, said Tuesday the new administration will continue to recognize Juan Guaido as the president of Venezuela rather than the democratically elected president, Nicolas Maduro. Blinken also said the U.S. would continue to impose harsh sanctions, which have crippled the Venezuelan economy. In January 2020, Venezuelan opposition leader Guaido stormed parliament with a group of lawmakers in an effort to forcefully swear himself in as Venezuela's leader. Guaido and his supporters were eventually pushed back by police with tear gas outside of government buildings. Guaido has failed to consolidate power since 2019's unsuccessful coup attempt. Ongoing U.S. sanctions have crippled the Venezuelan economy. Research from the Center for Economic and Policy Research estimates as many as 40,000 Venezuelans have died due to sanctions. At least 43 refugees were killed in a shipwreck off Libya's coast Tuesday. The deaths mark the first known tragedy of 2021 in the Mediterranean Sea, where over 20,000 people have drowned since 2014, according to the UN. 10 survivors were brought back to land, including migrants from Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and Gambia. The UN says the journey by sea from Libya to Europe is the most dangerous migration route in the world, and one in six people who attempt it has died. Back in the United States, the Justice Department has dropped an insider trading probe against Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, who sold hundreds of thousands of dollars of stocks early last year after receiving privileged briefings about the threat of the coronavirus. The Justice Department informed Burr of its decision Tuesday, the last full day of the Trump administration. President Biden signed an executive order to impose stricter ethic rules on government workers. Biden has banned so-called golden parachutes when companies give bonuses to workers who leave to enter the government. The order will also bar Biden appointees from lobbying the administration if they leave office before his term ends. Government watchdogs are demanding transparency over donations to Joe Biden's and Kamala Harris's inaugural committee after it accepted gifts of up to $1 million from corporations and wealthy individuals. Among major donors to the inaugural, Amazon, Boeing, Capital Group, Comcast, Fidelity Financial, Google, Microsoft, Qualcomm, UPS, United Airlines, and Verizon. In 2019, House Democrats proposed an ethics bill that would cap inaugural donations at $50,000 while requiring the online disclosure of major donors. And the family of reality winner is urging President Biden to free the NSA whistleblower who's been behind bars for over 3.5 years for leaking documents to The Intercept about Russian meddling in the 2016 elections. The ongoing campaign to free reality winner has gained renewed urgency as The Intercept reported this week. Winner recently faced threats from a guard after she made a report of abuse against him last March. This is reality winner's mother, Billie Winner Davis.
Mr. President, my daughter was jailed, denied bail, and has been imprisoned for over 3.5 years. She has suffered tremendously. She has been beaten, injured, sexually assaulted by her jailer, and denied compassionate release. Please, Mr. President, bring my daughter home.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. When we come back, we get reaction to the inauguration and Biden's sweeping executive actions from Harvard professor Cornel West and the pioneering Latinx journalist Mariana Hossa. Stay with us.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. I know that there's a God above, and all I've ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. It's not a cry you hear at night. It's not someone who's seen the light. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
That's gospel singer Yolanda Adams singing Hallelujah. She sang it first on Tuesday night at the COVID memorial with President Biden and Vice President Harris. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman here in New York, along with Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Good morning, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world.
Well, Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States Wednesday, ending the Trump era with a call for national unity and urging Americans to come together during a period of turbulence. Biden spoke on the Capitol steps, that building that just 2 weeks ago prior was mobbed by a group of right-wing extremists trying to overthrow the election.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard. And the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. So now, on this hallowed ground where just a few days ago, violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power as we have for more than two centuries. This is a great nation. We are good people. And over the centuries, through storm and strife, in peace and in war, we've come so far, but we still have far to go. We'll press forward with speed and urgency, for we have much to do in this winter of peril and significant possibilities. Much to repair, much to restore, much to heal, much to build, and much to gain. Few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. Once in a century virus that silently stalks the country. It's taken as many lives in 1 year as America lost in all of World War II.
Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy, unity. Unity.
That was President Joe Biden in his first address to the nation. Shortly before his speech, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, the first Latinx Supreme Court justice, a Puerto Rican daughter of the Bronx, swore in Kamala Harris as the first ever woman, South Asian, and Black vice president, a daughter of Oakland.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Later on Wednesday afternoon, Vice President Harris swore in three barrier-breaking new Democratic U.S. senators, giving Democrats narrow control of the Senate. Reverend Raphael Warnock is the first African-American senator from Georgia and the first African-American Democratic senator from the South. John Ossoff is the first Jewish senator from Georgia. He's also the youngest member of the Senate. Alex Padilla, who replaces Harris in the Senate representing California, is the first Latinx senator to represent California.
The chair lays before the Senate two certificates of election for the state of Georgia and a certificate of appointment to fill the vacancy created by the resignation of former Senator Kamala D. Harris of California.
President Biden signed 17 executive orders in his first official act from the Oval Office on Wednesday, striking down Trump's ban on travelers from majority Muslim nations, ending construction of Trump's border wall, and strengthening DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program for young immigrants. Biden rejoined the Paris Climate Accord and canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, put a moratorium on permits in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ordered a review of Trump's actions undermining public health and the environment. President Biden extended a federal moratorium on evictions and a pause on student loan payments and interest. Biden also ordered the U.S. to re-engage with the World Health Organization and ordered a mask mandate for interstate travelers and visitors to federal buildings during the pandemic. For more on these actions of the Biden administration, on the overall inauguration and Inauguration Day itself, and what comes next, not to mention what came before, we're joined by two guests. Dr. Cornel West is with us, professor of the practice of public philosophy at Harvard University, author of many books, including Race Matters and Black Prophetic Fire. His new podcast is called The Tightrope. And Mariana Hossa joins us, award-winning journalist and author of the new memoir, Once I Was You. She's founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA, and co-host of the podcast In the Thick. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Mariana Hossa, let's begin with you. If you can talk about what we watched yesterday, And later in the day, the executive orders, a number of them dealing with immigration, not to mention not exactly perfectly formed immigration plan or defined, but some outlines of it. But also the swearing in of the first woman vice president, first Caribbean American, Indian American, African American vice president, daughter of Oakland, by Sonia Sotomayor, the first Latinx Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, it was pretty mind-blowing to see that moment, Amy. And it's great to be here with you and with Cornell on, you know, on a new day, really, when we're saying that it really is a new day. And I'm so thrilled to be here with you and your audience and Dr. West to talk about all of this. Now, like you, there were a lot of mixed emotions. I mean, I was getting very emotional, which I was catching myself because I had that level of emotion. Of course, we all did when Barack Obama was elected and brought into office, and we all had these extraordinary expectations. And then things didn't turn out that way. So everything was this kind of like, oh, my God, this is so beautiful. Oh, my God, the United States of America. Oh, my God, we're back. And then it was just like, wow, what just happened? My husband kept on saying to me, it was by a hair. He just looked at me at one point. He said, he just went like this. By this much, we didn't lose this democracy. And so that is real. I mean, they were coming to murder people. This was an attempted coup d'etat in the United States, and the entire world saw it. On the other hand, we are breathing more freely. As journalists, we knew that what we could be facing was an even more targeted assault on us. As a journalist who's Mexican, an immigrant, not born in this country, I didn't know what was going to come next for me. Like that. At the same time, Kamala is vice president. This is incredible. This is extraordinary. Dr. Jill Biden, continue working in community colleges. So, you know, it was here in my household, my daughter, you know, who I was just like, aren't you emotional? And she was like, and she was very much active in electoral politics for the first time ever in her life at 22. But she just kept on saying, I don't want people to just walk away now. I don't want people to just think it's all good. And so the work continues. La luta continúa.
And Dr. Cornell West, if you could respond to what happened yesterday at the inauguration and your sense of what this new administration might hold.
Well, again, I'm just blessed any time to be with you, my dear sister and Sister Amy, Sister Maria. But I was just thinking about this fundamental pattern of American history where, 200,000 black soldiers had to join the Union Army, break the back of white supremacist slavery, black freedom movement in the 60s, break the back of white supremacist apartheid. Here again, you got black folk coming to keep us going off the neo-fascist cliff with the gangster Trump. And yet at the same time, black folk often in the end end up re-crucified, especially black poor, especially black working class. This is a point I think Sister Maria was making about the disappointment that there's a rot in the system. And the rot is corporate greed and Pentagon militarism. And no matter how many you sprinkle, no matter how many people of color you sprinkle around, even in high places, if they can't reshift that trajectory of the empire, then in fact, you end up with a deep, deep disappointment, you see? So I it is a new day. I'm so glad we stopped the neo-fascist threat. I want to thank Amy Allison, which she, the people, want to thank Stacey Abrams, of course, with Fair Fight, Refuse Fascism with Sister Sansara and Brother Andy. And actually, I was part of that myself as a co-initiator. But I'm it's not just mixed emotions, but I'm just now suspicious of the capitulation to the neoliberal greed and lies and hatred. Now that we've pushed back the neo-fascist forms of greed and lies and hatred. And so the issue of poor people, the issue of working people, that's going to be the crucial thing for me. And when you look at Biden, you know, you say, okay, the old Biden is tied to three crimes against humanity: invasion and occupation of Iran, mass incarceration, especially for young black and brown brothers and sisters. And then you've got the Wall Street greed unleashed. And we haven't even got to the vicious Israeli occupation. All of those Biden, the old Biden, fundamentally tied to, used to brag about each and every one of them. We'll see whether there's a new Biden. I want to be open. You know, I'm a prisoner of hope. But I wasn't born that night. Maybe last night. I wasn't born last night. Let me put it that way. I was born that night, but not last night. We're going to see.
Dr. West, I'd like to ask you about comments that you made in a recent interview saying that effectively there's no democracy left in America because of the nihilism in the country, the various forms of nihilism. And you talk about the fact that the 74 million people who voted for Trump, of which a slim majority were both women and men, white women and men, but also one out of three Asians, one out of three Jews, more than one out of three Latinos, and even one out of five Black men. So could you say a little bit more about that, the range of people who voted for Trump, and there are 74 million of them? What should happen to them? What will happen to them under this new administration? How should they be dealt with or engaged?
I think part of the problem, though, my dear sister, is that with the corporate duopoly of the two parties, so you got the Republican Party, you got the Democratic Party, both of them tied to corporate greed, both of them tied to Pentagon militarism and all of the criminality that goes with that, the drones and so forth and so on, that the deep desperation along with the deep suffering of people forces them to have to choose between the two. So when neoliberal policies come along and you get all the rationalizers of globalization that don't say a mumbling word about inequality, don't say a mumbling word about mass incarceration and so forth, that they say, OK, let's try the Democrats. Then, boom, 1% walks off with most of the wealth. Let's try populism. Well, the populism was much more right wing than left wing. Many of us with Bernie tried left wing. The neoliberals crushed us unfairly in many ways. So they try the alternative. Here comes Trump, the neo-fascist Pied Piper. What happened? They still get crushed. How do poor and working people ever get their voices heard? And we know, you know, you got social scientists like Brother Gillens and others who say that the voices of ordinary people are not heard. 72% of American citizens want Medicare for all. Biden, the exemplar of empathy and common humanity and compassion, he says he'll veto that bill in the middle of a pandemic. That doesn't look like too much empathy for me at all. What are we talking about here? As long as you got a system with this rot, the neoliberal form of the rot, the neo-fascist form of the rot, we've got to have much more either left populist, much more radical, or we're going to be right back where we were 4 years ago because the neoliberal policy of the old Biden won't work. But I'm giving the new Biden a chance. He might be FDR. We'll see. He's got to be bold. We'll see. I'm not holding my breath, but we shall see. History has a mystery to it.
Former President Donald Trump did not attend the Biden-Harris inauguration, but three of his predecessors did, Presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. They filmed a video message to President Biden Wednesday while standing in the Memorial Amphitheater at the Arlington National Cemetery.
Obviously, there was a personal element to see my former vice president become the 46th president, to see Kamala Harris as our first woman vice president. But more broadly, I think inaugurations signal a tradition of a peaceful transfer of power that is over two centuries old.
Well, I think the fact that the three of us are standing here talking about a peaceful transfer of power speaks to the institutional integrity of our country.
So this is an unusual thing. We are both trying to come back to normalcy, deal with totally abnormal challenges, and do what we do best, which is try to make a more perfect union. It's an exciting time.
So I want to put this question to each of you. That was President Clinton, before that George W. Bush, and starting with President Obama. On the one hand, this sense that the country is returning to normalcy, to a bipartisan consensus. But you look at the men, you look at George W. Bush, responsible for how many deaths invading Afghanistan and then Iraq. You look at President Clinton, the welfare so-called reform bill that led to the impoverishment of so many and mass incarceration, which, of course, Joe Biden was very much a part of. And then President Obama called by his closest immigrant rights allies, the deporter in chief. Now, on the other hand, you have this slew of executive orders. On the first day, as they were recording this, you had President Biden signing off on the executive orders. And the executive orders include fortifying DACA. They include, at least for now, halting border wall construction. They approve reversing the travel ban in Muslim-majority countries and undoing Trump's expansion of immigration enforcement within the U.S. If you can talk about this, what a return to so-called normalcy means, and if at this point, at this kind of breaking point in American history, does there need to be a break? And I'd like to put that question to both of you, starting with Professor Cornel West.
Well, no, when I see those three brothers, they're tied to crimes against humanity. There's no doubt about that, from drones dropped on innocent people, from a Wall Street greed that crushes poor people and actually kills them concretely and symbolically. When you look at the role that the occupations and invasions have played, both not just abroad, but even here at home, military occupations in our cities, you see, so that anytime you're head of an empire, no matter what color, no matter what, either Democrat or Republican, you're head of an empire, you're going to be tied to crimes against humanity. And I refuse to normalize that. You know, I refuse to just look at Bill Clinton and say nothing about a vicious, vicious crime bill and withdrawal of resources for people who are hungry. You see, just morally and spiritually, that's wrong. And Obama dropping these drones and bailing out Wall Street rather than working people and killing us, assassinating American citizens with no due process at all, and he walks around like he's some grand progressive. Please, get off the crack pipe. We got to tell the truth. The truth is bigger than all of us. Bush, we want to get into in terms of the Iraq war and so on, and the lies and so forth. This is what we don't hear on corporate media. Thank God for Democracy Now. Thank God for what you all do, because we can't normalize this kind of mistreatment of our fellow human beings. So it doesn't make any difference what color they are. We're going to check with Sister Harris and see whether she falls right in step. There's a good chance she will. Then we have to be critical.
And Maria Hinojosa.
Look, yes to all of that. I mean, for me, everything that—well, let me just start with the three presidents, because I'm right with you. I think that is what America is. America is that country that forgets— willingly. We were all alive. We covered what happened with Gore versus Bush and the Supreme Court deciding who was going to be president. That is not a democracy. In my book, Once I Was You, everybody is so just kind of their minds are blown, because it turns out, yes, it was Bill Clinton, in fact, who started building the wall. It was Bill Clinton who, in fact, signed all of those laws that led to where we are now, where people can be put into detention, prison-like conditions, simply for not being born in this country. So, and George W. Bush, please, the largest liar, por favor, Colin Powell, we lived through this, the lives. So, but on the other hand, I actually disagree with my brother, Cornel West, in this. I don't believe that democracy is dead yet. And I think this is the tricky part, right? Because, for example, more Latinos came out to vote than we have ever seen before. And this was extraordinarily important because they are the second largest voting bloc in the United States of America. So the fact that I'm here talking about this is really important, because the other side of the Latino coin for the last, 50 years is our invisibility, right? Which ties into what Dr. West was talking about, and this is where I completely agree with him. The empire, which needs the militarization, which was built on mass incarceration, which is slowly being deconstructed, slowly, but what is it going to be replaced with? The immigration industrial mass complex, that's what it's been. So the immigration plan that Joe Biden said, it's amazing that he is going to cut off the Remain in Mexico policy for refugees. But he said, but if you're there, you have to remain there now. You can't move. It's like, what does this mean? We're going to have immigration reform. It's just going to take 8 years. In 8 years, there could be a new administration. Everybody knows that. 8 years? So I'm only hoping that what I want to see around me is more people understanding that democracy is not just about a vote. It is about everything. Is it about Democracy Now? It's about Cornel West and his professorship. It's about the work that I do at Futuro Media, the books we write, the conversations we have. I'm a little bit in Trump territory here in Bethlehem, Connecticut, and I'm having to find my way to have these conversations with my neighbors. And I do that because that's my job and because it's my civic duty, because I chose to become an American citizen. So all of this, for someone who chose to become an American citizen, oh, hell yes. But who was also around when Nixon was the first one who I saw impeached. So we're not going away. And this fire that we have for this dynamic, this capacity to not all be on the same page, that is what democracy looks like. We need more of it.
And I'd like to ask each of you, Maria, if you could begin, what do you think now the Democrats are in control of the House and of the Senate? What do you think the priorities should be? And also, how can more progressive Democrats push the Biden-Harris administration to pursue policies that will differentiate this Democrat administration from the Obama one? Maria, if you could begin.
Yeah, well, look, if you ask me, and I suppose I'm a little bit of a radical on this, what I would do, because, you know, we are much stronger than we think, that we've been able to live through this pandemic and staying home and not seeing anyone, not hugging people, not seeing our family. But I want it to stop. I would do a full shutdown. I would. And I would pay people. I would pay people. I would have, you know, checks going out to so that people can be home. That we're protecting the most essential workers, really, so that the economy and people can chill out and relax and not be freaking out at this point. And that takes care of COVID and the economy, I think, and, you know, inspiring the economy. Immigration reform, you know, people see it as a kind of an issue. Do you understand that if you were to do massive immigration reform right now, and I'm talking like in 3 years, what that would do to boost the American economy? Across the board. So I kind of feel like the neoliberalism stops this administration from being what they think is going to be called radical. And what I say, and I know what both of you say too, is this is not radical. What is radical is taking the uterus from a woman simply because she was not born in this country. What's radical is putting children in cages. What's radical is a police officer murdering a black man for doing nothing while being captured on camera. That is radical. The solutions and the question here for the Biden administration, we're on the same page here, is can you change the narrative? Can you take accountability, apologize in a very big way, the both of them, so that we can begin to trust that there will be a deeper commitment to this real new day that we want to get to?
And Dr. West.
Indeed. Yeah, no, I'm with my dear Sister Maria. In fact, I would even go further in embracing Sister Maria here. And you tell me what you think, my sister, that, I would say as long as there's persons like all of us, as long as there's artists like Yolanda Adams, as long as there's poets like Sister Amanda and Gabrielle, her sister, and Joan, her mother, that democracy is alive in the hearts and minds of people. And as long as we're willing to fight, as long as we're willing to tell the truth, as long as we're willing to hold on to integrity as opposed to superficial popularity, democracy is alive in the hearts and minds of people. But it's our structures that are profoundly anti-democratic. It's the big money. It's the lobbyists. It's the Wall Street greed. It's the big tech greed. That's what stands in the way. It's the white supremacy and the male supremacy and so forth and so on. The hatred of gays and lesbians and trans and non-binaries and so forth. So that in that way, there's always a struggle going on. So if I were asked, you know, what the Biden administration ought to do, they ought to look at the 14 points of the Poor People's Campaigns. My dear Sister Thea Harris and my dear brother Barber, they lay it out. Massive cuts in military, fundamental investment in schools, in housing, in jobs with a living wage, the empowerment of the trade union movement, the defense of rights and liberties. And this is very, very important, you see, because when Biden's talk about critiquing white supremacy is a beautiful thing. We've never had a president talk about white supremacy like that. Even Obama, with two inaugural speeches, never talked about white supremacy like that. Right. But when you, but when he talks about domestic terrorists, the next thing you know, I'm a domestic terrorist because I'm critical of Israeli occupation. If I'm critical of any form of Zionism by using the very term Zionism, that makes me an enemy of the state. So we have to be very clear that we're not for massive repression and censorship and the defense of rights and liberties, even as we're against white supremacy and male supremacy and any other ideology that loses sight of the humanity of people. And this is going to be a very important challenge, but we must raise our voices no matter what, based in part on what the Poor People's Campaign and other progressives are doing, not the fashionable, glitzy neoliberals who trot around as if they are progressives, but in fact they're in the hip pocket of Wall Street and corporate greedy elites and big tech elites and militaristic elites. That's going to be the challenge. And that's the legacy of our dear brother this week, Martin Luther King Jr. That's what is so powerful in the poetry of Sister Gorman and the music of Yolanda Adams, if we listen very closely and let it touch our souls.
Speaking of Martin Luther King and others, the new Oval Office decor has busts of Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez and Eleanor Roosevelt and Rosa Parks, among others, along with a portrait of FDR. We're going to get final comments from Maria Hinojosa and Dr. Cornel West after break and after we play this remarkable 5 minutes during the inauguration, the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history. Stay with us.
I woke up to the morning sky first. Baby blue, just like we be first. When I get up off this ground, I shake leaves back down to the brown, 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 till I'm clean. Then I walk, I'll be shaded by the trees, by a meadow of green, for about a mile. I'm headed to town, 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 in style, with all my favorite colors, light on, all my favorite colors, yes, ma'am. My sisters and my brother, see you like my brother, we're my favorite color. So quit playing to me, a quit play for me, a quit play to see my favorite colors, colors.
Texas band Black Pumas singing Colors from last night's Celebrating America inaugural concert program. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. One of the most remarkable moments of Wednesday's inaugural ceremony came from the inaugural poet, Amanda Gorman of Los Angeles. She's the youngest poet in U.S. history to address a presidential inauguration. She became the Youth Poet Laureate of Los Angeles at the age of 16 in 2014, and then the first National Youth Poet Laureate. The 22-year-old poet read her poem, The Hill We Climb. She finished it right after the riot at the Capitol earlier this month. Her words captured the nation. This is Amanda Gorman.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother, can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So, while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe, now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the windswept Northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known
nook of our nation, in every corner called our country, our people diverse and beautiful will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Twenty-two-year-old Amanda Gorman, the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history. This is Democracy Now! As we end our conversation with Dr. Cornel West, professor of the practice of public philosophy at Harvard University, and award-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. In the last few minutes we have, Professor West, you were in Charlottesville, Virginia, when the Klan marched, when the white supremacists marched. Amanda was writing her poem through the riot, the white supremacist attack on the Capitol. Your final thoughts?
Yes, we say to Brother Biden, you know, when he stood on the floor of the Senate November 18, 1993, and said, these young black folk are predators on the street beyond the pale to be taken out of society. If you're going to talk about empathy, you ought to extend your empathy to the cousins of the brilliant visionary poet Amanda on that street. They're human beings, even when they're incarcerated. Extend your sympathy to the immigrants trying to make their way, often coming into a country that used to be theirs, our Mexican brothers. Extend your sympathy to poor, no matter what color, working class, no matter what color. Yes, Jewish folk, hated in Spain, hated in France, Palestinians hated on the West Bank. Where is your concrete empathy and compassion and acknowledging common humanity? That's the kind of pressure that he's going to have to expect from love warriors, freedom fighters like both myself and the Amanda Gormans, with memories of Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and Toni Morrison and John Coltrane's Love Supreme.
And Maria, your final thoughts?
Wow, just also Frederick Douglass and Ida B. Wells, my founding fathers and founding mothers, right? That's why we do this. Look, the only thing that I—and I'm trying to stay inspired. I really am, because otherwise what happens? So we just have to realize that those of us who have this understanding of what democracy looks like got to deepen it. Okay, sometimes you can chill, you got to take a, you know, relax, whatever, I understand, but we deepen it. That's why I love being on with both you, Amy, who I've known for years, and Brother West, is because there's such a humanity here. And I think that if Joe Biden and Kamala can do something, it would be to actually try to humanize, as Cornel was saying, the brothers and sisters of our dear poet, of Amanda, of so many, right? To humanize those who were not born here like myself. So this is our challenge. As I tell my students, I'm about to start teaching any minute now at Barnard, and I'll tell my students, there are some days when you cannot, in fact, be that unifier. So don't try it on those days. On the days when you can have dialogue, yes. But you know what? At the same time now, maybe this isn't a time for that. Right now, give ourselves a little bit of a break also, to take critical pause for what we're seeing and to understand, finally, we are much stronger than we think. We never thought we could make it this far. But also, we did not all make it. We did not all make it. And so for that, I'm very sorry. But I'm looking at the sun, and I'm incredibly hopeful. Nature is what grounds me, and I hope it grounds the both of you, too. It's the three of you. It's been such a pleasure to be with all of you.
We thank you so much for being here on this post-inauguration broadcast. Maria Hinojosa, award-winning journalist, author, and professor. And Dr. Cornel West, professor of practice of public philosophy at Harvard University. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder-Libby, Rainey Nermin-Sheikh, Maria Tadasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Massoud, and Adriano Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmeet Sheth. Stay safe.